Human Services to order this Monday, March 28th, 2005. We have three things on our agenda today. House Bill 2588, the chiropractic workers' comp study. House Bill 2789, we will not be hearing today. And we will also hear House Bill 2672, and we'll grab John Lynn when that one is available. So I'd like to invite Representative Andy Olson from House District 15 and Representative Max Sumner forward from House District 18 and ask Sandy to introduce this measure to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good morning. Happy Monday to you. House Bill 2588 is brought to us by several people, but primarily at the request of the Chiropractic Association of Oregon. It directs the Oregon Health and Sciences University to conduct a research project to investigate any and all impacts if we were to allow open access to chiropractic services in the workers' comp system and with the claims. That's a brief synopsis, and we'll let our folks speak to the details.
Great, and I'll have Vern Sabo come up as well in case some questions arise. Representative Krupp, did you wish to testify also?
I did.
Okay, well, you come up.
Yes.
So, Representative Olson, go ahead.
You want to listen?
Okay. Refer to my feathers.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Andy Olson. I'm a state representative serving the greater Albany and Benton County areas. I am here to give testimony in support of House Bill 2588. I'd like to share with you an incident that occurred nearly 23 years ago to me that still impacts me today. It was Sunday, July 16th, 1982. I was on duty displaying a badge, wearing a uniform, operating a marked patrol car for the Oregon State Police as a trooper. I was assigned out of the Albany Patrol Office. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, I happened to find myself in pursuit of a stolen vehicle that was on a county road heading east out of Albany, and we were up to speeds of 120 miles per hour. We were coming up on a curve that was a posted 15-mile-per-hour curve, which I was well familiar with, and started mentally and physically preparing to slow down for it. As we approached the curve, my brakes did not respond like they should have, and instead of trying to attempt to turn into the curve, I went straight ahead toward a guardrail and took a guardrail out at about 70 miles per hour. The crash itself caused my head to run into the sun visor that was overhead and hit that sharply, and then also the steering wheel with my face, and then the glass that shattered as a result of going underneath the guardrail came flying back at me in my face and my whole body. It was not until about 2 weeks later that I began to feel the impact of the crash on my neck and right shoulder. And for the next 8 years, I visited a chiropractor to deal with a chronic problem to my neck and shoulders. In 1990, the chiropractic care ended for me as a result of an incident that occurred back then I still don't quite understand the whole thing. But anyways, I did not receive any more chiropractic care as a result of it. I have sought relief from medical doctors with prescriptions and found that it does not relieve the chronic pain as chiropractic care does. I do not feel surgery is the answer at this point, but it might be in the future with the attention given through chiropractic treatment. I believe chiropractic treatment is effective and it appears to be less costly than medical care. I urge this committee to support House Bill 2588 to conduct a cost comparison study comparing chiropractic versus medical treatment of injured workers with neck and back injuries. And I thank you at this time.
Great. Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good morning. I hope that you all had a good Easter Sunday. I'm here also to testify in support of House Bill 2588. Because I am a chiropractic patient and was injured some years ago on the farm working for myself. This is not a workers' compensation type injury, however, it would have been had I been working for someone else. Because I was my own boss as a farmer at the time, when I sustained this injury, I have borne the entire burden over a number of years now, a little over 10 years, in dealing with the complications that I've had over the years with this particular injury. I was, as you know, as a farmer, I did a lot of irrigating. I was in a in the Muddy Creek, and I was bent over lifting up a very large suction line, which we used to pull the water in to irrigate with. And I did a real no-no. You are not supposed to be bent over, lift, and twist at the same time, which is precisely what I did. And sustained an injury that put me in bed for a couple of days in a great deal of pain. Had x-rays, had a number of opinions, and I really was not a candidate, and still am not a candidate for surgery. However, I deal with pain every day of my life. There is not a day that I do not wake up with some pretty severe low back pain. And I manage it, and I learned how to manage that through physical therapy and through chiropractic care. Now, I do not, a couple of times a month I go to my chiropractor, and that helps me deal with the level of pain. There's pain there every day, but the level of pain is that quality of life issue. Now, had I been employed for someone else and sustained an injury of this type, I probably would have been one of those people in the gray area. The gray area meaning you're really not, it's musculoskeletal, there's not a lot of damage that can be seen on an x-ray or an MRI, so you're not really a candidate for surgery. But on the other hand, the pain is real. And some days, I live on painkillers through a good share of the day. Most days I don't have to, but some days it's just that unpleasant that that's my only way to cope with a condition that I brought on myself. Nonetheless, if it wasn't for chiropractic care, my level of pain and being able to deal with it once it gets to a certain point, I don't know what I would do, to be quite honest with you. If you look at the minimal amount of care that I required over the last 10 years, and extrapolate that and do that in comparison to what it would have cost me had I gotten an opinion from a doctor that said, yeah, we think you ought to try back surgery, and knowing that it really is hit or miss in many ways. If you compare that cost of chiropractic care compared to what it would have cost me just for initial examinations, let alone actually going to surgery, the difference is huge. And because it's not been determined that my condition really brings me to the point where I need surgery yet today, to have gone down that road may have been a totally unnecessary and inappropriate expense. And certainly had I been in the workers' compensation system at the time. So I think that what this bill is driving at, and what its aim and its ultimate goal is, to make an accurate cost comparison between chiropractic study, chiropractic care, as how it relates to your quality of life, and how it relates to the workers' compensation system and what it may do for an injured worker, compared to the costs, the medical costs, of going down the route, perhaps prematurely, of having full-blown surgical care. It's appropriate for some people it isn't. I haven't gotten to that place yet, and until I see medical conditions and reports of success rates improving, I'm not sure I want to go down that particular road also. That's why I think it's a fair idea that we go forward with this study, because I think it will help lay the groundwork. There have been a couple of other studies been done in other states that show that there is a reduction in cost to the overall workers' compensation system with appropriate levels of chiropractic care. Again, it is not appropriate in every instance, but there are clearly circumstances, and I think I'm one of them, where if I were in the workers' compensation system, my chiropractic care would still benefit me as well as it has today, but it would have cost employers less. It would have cost the system less money. Now, had my condition been worse, surgery may have been appropriate. And for those circumstances, this study, I think, will clearly delineate that and show them. But for the purposes of determining cases like mine, I think this is a good idea. I think it will give us a baseline with wherewith we can move forward in future years. I think this is an important first step, and I'd very much appreciate the committee moving this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sumner.
Thank you, Chairman Dalto. Members of the committee, my story is not as dramatic.
Maybe. We just need to state your name for the record, please.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I didn't do
Representative
that
Representative Krupp didn't do it either, but...
I'm Representative Max Sumner from House District 18. That's Malala, Colton, Mount Angel, and Silverton.
Thank you.
My story, my testimony is not that exciting. My back problems are a result of repetitive motion on a forklift in the warehouse where I worked for 33 years. In the late 70s, I started to experience pain in my lower back that would make my legs go numb, and sometimes my private parts would hurt to the point where I could barely stand up. Went to a medical doctor, and he prescribed pretty powerful drugs that made the pain go away. However, when I took those drugs, I found I was unable to go to work. I couldn't even drive the car reasonably, you know. You've seen the warning labels, don't drive the car, operate heavy machinery. I couldn't do it. After talking to the medical doctor, he suggested that surgery on my back, which had become compacted from repetitive jarring, he suggested that surgery on my back may or may not make it better. He said, in fact, there's a 50% chance it'll make it worse. He suggested I go to a chiropractor. An MD suggested this. Dale Robinson in Malala made my back feel like I could actually work again without pills. And I did. My objective was to work long enough to put in the required time until I could retire. I retired early and took a lower retirement pay, but the fact is I made it without a big lawsuit and a big pain to anybody involved, including myself. Still today, I get adjustments from my chiropractor, Dale Robinson, in Malala. I'm on a first-name basis with this guy. He makes the pain go away. I think, in my case, chiropractic saved the insurance company, which was not safe. It was not safe. It was a private insurer. Saved the insurance company tons of money. They had me quit going to MDs for treatment that did no good at all, and had me see a chiropractor once every 2 weeks. It kept me working. It kept me on the job. It kept me alert without the drugs. It's a reason why I'm sitting here today. Somewhat uncomfortably, by the way, but I am still sitting, and I'm still walking around, and I'm a useful member to society simply because I got chiropractic care. I believe that the passage of House Bill 2588 would be a great thing, would, for once and for all, add some information to this argument that's been ongoing. Will chiropractic actually help people who are in pain from injuries to their spine? I urge you to pass this 2588 on to the full House. Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. And see, Representative Sumner, I thought your story was just as interesting as the other stories, so I'm glad that you brought it forward. All right, thanks, gentlemen, very much. Were there any comments or questions from the panel? Yeah, Representative Campbell.
Representative Krupp, you mentioned that there's two other states that have already done this study.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Cameron, I understand that there are two states that have done similar studies that have been concluded. One just not that long ago, if my memory serves me correctly. And I cannot name for you the states that they are. It's not sticking in my brain, but I'm pretty sure that two of them have been.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members?
Next, I'd like to invite up Vern Sabo. And Vern, do you have Jennifer Wisdom with you?
Yeah.
Okay. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
you could introduce yourselves before you start, that'd be great. Before you start talking.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. Vern Sabo. I am the current president of the Chiropractic Association of Oregon. I'm, of course, here to testify in favor of House Bill 2588, which calls for a cost comparison study comparing the costs of chiropractic versus medical treatment of injured workers with mainly musculoskeletal injuries, such as low back injuries, neck injuries. We propose that Oregon Health Science University Center for Health and Disability Policy would perform the study. Principal investigator would be Dr. Jennifer Wisdom, who's seated to my left. The rationale for the study is that we believe that the current arbitrary restrictions on chiropractic services, on chiropractic physicians, is actually costing the system a tremendous amount of money, not saving. While at the same time, restricting injured workers with things such as a low back injury from the scientifically proven most effective treatment modality known, and that being spinal manipulation. There is now 73 high-quality clinical trials that support the efficacy of chiropractic spinal manipulation for low back pain alone, more than any other known medical procedure, so it's really not alternative care at this point. It's actually the standard of care. Since the arbitrary restrictions, there's been considerable cost shifting, and this is what our study is designed to capture. For example, the statistics just published by the Department of Consumer Business Services revealed that per quarter, medical physicians received $22.1 million. Some of that was to family physicians and to surgeons. The current gatekeepers of the workers' comp system, family physicians and internists, if you stop and think about it, by and large do not provide any hands-on treatment of low back injury cases. They do one of two things. They prescribe medications and or physical therapy, usually both. So they're both direct medical costs in the treatment of injured workers, medical treatment of injured workers. Now, chiropractic physicians provide their own in-house physical therapy. We pride ourselves on not prescribing medications. In addition to that, medical physicians generally will have a board-certified radiologist read the films for them. We read and take our own films. Now, according to the Department of Consumer and Business Services first quarter statistics just out from 2004, physical therapists were paid in the first quarter of 2004 $4.9 million, which is a little more than three times what chiropractic physicians were paid at $1.6 million. We, again, provide our own physical therapy. Drug prescriptions were at $4.1 million per quarter, and we don't prescribe medications. And the number one medication, incidentally, according to 2002 statistics, was for narcotics at the tune of $333,000 per quarter. And the radiologists were at $2.4 million versus our $1.6 million. So that's the type of cost shifting that has transpired since the restrictions on chiropractic services. Why we believe that this study will show some considerable cost savings when chiropractic physicians manage the care is due to three studies that were published just last year, which Representative Krupp was alluding to. The first study was out of Illinois, and it is a prospective four-year study within the managed care arena. This is where policyholders could select a chiropractic physician as their primary care doctor or a medical physician as their primary care doctor, and they followed them through time forward 4 years. That has never been done in the managed care arena. Everything to date had been always retrospective review of existing data. 4 years later, the chiropractic managed group, these are the savings. Now, understanding the managed care savings of 1% to 5% are substantial. These are the savings with when chiropractic physicians manage the care. 43%, there was a 43% reduction in hospital admissions, 58.4% reduction in hospital days, a 43.2% decrease in outpatient surgeries and procedures such as MRIs, and a 51.8% reduction in drug costs. Then they last year published in the American Medical Association's Archives of Internal Medicine. It was a four-year retrospective study of some 1.7 million patient members. This is out of California. 700,000 had chiropractic coverage, 1 million did not, and they looked at the two groups. They found, the investigators found, an overall decrease of 12%, a 12% savings across the board. There was a 28% reduction in costs of treatment of back pain, a 41% reduction in hospitalizations, this is with the chiropractic managed cases, a 32% reduction in spinal surgeries, 37% reduction in MRIs and x-rays, with a 95% patient satisfaction, and with the authors concluding that if all 1.7 million patient members had chiropractic coverage, that the plan could save as much as $47 million each year. Lastly, this study out of North Carolina, a retrospective review of some 19 years of data from their workers' comp department, a review of 43,000 claims. The average cost, medical costs per claim, were right at $3,500 versus $663 for chiropractic. Time lost days, average. Medical management, 176 days versus 33 days for chiropractic treatment. Total average claim costs for medically managed cases, $25,848 versus $4,074 with chiropractic managed cases. Because of those studies, we anticipate that this study will in fact validate that with chiropractic management of back and neck type injuries, the savings to the workers' comp system, to businesses, will be substantial, while at the same time providing the most effective treatment to those injured workers. Our study will simply validate that hypothesis or not. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that completes my testimony. I'd be more than happy to attempt to answer any questions.
Representative Greenland.
Good morning, Vern. Welcome.
Morning.
Welcome, Jennifer. Would you just put on the record what the situation has been in working compensation for the last few years relative to how chiropractors interact with patients in the system and how it would be different under this study? So just make clear what it is you're trying to test here. I think it might be very useful.
Well, under the current work comp changes, a chiropractic physician is limited to 12 visits or 30 days. Now, that's if, in fact, they are under a managed care organization. Or, excuse me, let me back up. If the patient is enrolled in a managed care organization, an MCO, the chiropractic physician, if he is not a panel provider, can only treat that patient until he gets notification from the carrier and MCO that that injured worker must see a panel provider. So regardless of whether or not they've seen that chiropractic physician for years, and there's that level of trust over the years that has been developed, they have to see a panel provider. And that's somewhat of a problem. Well, that's actually a real problem in many geographic areas. In Bend, for instance, I think there's four chiropractic physicians on panel, and there's some 70 chiropractors in the Central Oregon area. Then if, in fact, the doctor is within an MCO, what most of the MCOs have done, with one exception, and I think Mr. Schultz from the department is going to speak, he can address this issue and clear up any mistakes I might make. Most of the MCOs have deferred to the 12 visits or 30 days, and then you have to get recertification. And more times than not, that certification comes, they all have medical directors, so the recertification to get more chiropractic treatment comes from a medical source, a medical physician. If there is no managed care organizations, if the employee is not enrolled in a managed care organization, it's my understanding that the chiropractic physician can treat for 12 visits or 30 days. And then, actually, I'm not sure how that portion works. But I believe they have 12 visits in 30 days. are still limited by statute to 12 visits in 30 days. And then I believe they would require a medical physician's referral back for additional care.
And the model to be tested by the study differs from that, how?
If I can clarify that. My name is Jennifer Wisdom. I'm a research assistant professor at Oregon Health and Science University, and I direct the Center for Health and Disability Policy there. Representative Greenlake, the study test, well, I should say, currently, chiropractors are not allowed to be attending physicians, and that's part of where the difference is, because, as you know, a medical doctor may or may not recommend services by a chiropractor. So what this study test is whether allowing chiropractors to be attending physicians allows for a change in the funding that's out there, meaning will expenses change if more workers are allowed to attend less limited chiropractic services.
Thank you.
Well, I guess you can go ahead with your presentation.
Sure. Thank you. Representative and committee, I am not a chiropractor. I am neither for nor against chiropractic. I am neutral on the topic of chiropractic. I am in this study as a health services researcher and as someone whose primary interest is in conducting a well-organized and valid study that will investigate what I find to be a really fascinating health services research question. And that question is it possible to increase access and expand choice while at the same time lowering cost? Based on the information that Dr. Szabo has provided and based on my reading of the literature regarding chiropractic services, I believe this may be a possibility. And this study is designed to test that. I've designed the study to most closely reflect the environment of a policy change. As a policy person, I'm interested in making sure that whatever kind of research is done is directly applicable to a policy environment. In a policy environment, employees who are injured would be allowed to choose a chiropractor for their attending physician. That's what this study mirrors. So for this, we're randomizing employers into two groups. One group has the regular standard current benefits. The other group would have the expanded benefit of being allowed to choose a chiropractor as their attending physician and no other changes that are there. So that means that no one would have a doctor chosen for them. No one would be required to obtain chiropractic services. The only difference would be they'd be allowed to choose it. And that's designed that way to reflect the potential policy change. So, for example, if this is successful, if a policy change is enacted, no one is required to choose any specific doctor. It just expands their choice. Using claims data from insurance carriers, we would then test the differences in cost. We test overall cost. We could also test cost specific to injured workers who have musculoskeletal injuries, which is the group most likely to use chiropractic services. We can determine whether cost for workers in each group are the same or are different. We anticipate, based on the information that Dr. Szabo has provided, that the workers who chose chiropractic services in the group who are allowed to have expanded access to chiropractors will have lower costs associated with that. There are a lot of other questions we can compare. We can compare the duration of benefits. We can compare time loss. But the primary outcome for this study is, are costs different and do costs change when this expanded access is granted? We want to ensure we have enough injured workers. I believe you've all read or have a copy of the initial proposal that specifies more details about the study. I want to reiterate that I'm in this as a health services researcher. I think this is a fascinating study question, and I would like the opportunity to conduct the study. I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
President Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Jennifer, for your contribution this morning. Good to see both of you. Tell me, who will be funding this study?
My understanding is that the House bill provides funding for the study.
Chair Dalto, Representative Tomei and members of the committee, the worker, how the bill is written is the funding would come from the worker benefit fund, not from the general fund. And it's my understanding that is funded by employees and employers. Currently, I believe the assessment is 1.7 cents per hour that is contributed by the employee and the employer. It is our anticipation that, in fact, of course, it would be both that could benefit from the study.
Okay, and if I can have a follow-up. And, Jennifer, so people could choose to either have an MD or a doctor of chiropractic. Is that correct?
Right.
Could they choose both? Could they choose to see an MD and then later say, now I'd like to see a doctor of chiropractic?
Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're setting aside almost $1 million for the study. Is that correct?
Yes, Representative.
Could you give me a brief description of what's involved in a study?
Sure. I'd be happy to, Representative, committee members. The study is a five-year study. It includes myself, another staff person who's an expert in workers' compensation, a statistician, and a part-time administrative assistant. The work that would happen involves... I would say the most difficult part will be setting up the study in the very beginning. We then have approximately 200,000 workers per year to follow up on for claims. I mean, the insurance carrier would follow up. They would provide us with the data and then to analyze the data. If more than one carrier is involved, we'd need to do some fancy statistical work to make sure that we're comparing apples and apples.
So you're not really interviewing patients, you're just reviewing charts and forms?
We're reviewing the workers' compensation claims. There is we do plan to survey a subset of injured workers, to mail a survey and ask them to mail it back to us to determine functioning and status, because we want to make sure that people who are in each group, and regardless of who they chose as their attending physician, are improving at approximately the same rate and are as satisfied with their services.
Okay. Representative Cameron.
Yes. Do you foresee any cost to the insurance carriers in participating in the study?
We do. There are some costs associated with providing us the data and then also with conducting the discussions about logistics. And we've included in the bill a fee to provide to the insurance carriers to offset those costs for them.
It's outlined in the bill?
It's outlined in the research proposal.
Okay.
How common are five-year studies like this?
I think for projects that have this kind of scope, they're relatively common.
I'm just finishing up a 20-year study.
Okay. You are, Representative Greenwich?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Okay, you're right.
Okay. All right, well, thank you both very much.
Thank you very much.
It is true.
But I don't know.
Next, I'll call up Chris Davey with SAFE. I'll invite him, Chris Davey. Good morning, welcome.
Well, Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Chris Davey with SAFE Corporation. And here to talk about House Bill 2588 in its original form and from conversations I have with Dr. Sabo and with Dr. Wisdom, there are a number of amendments that will be in the process of being drafted to incorporate into the bill. As you've heard, the history of chiropractic involvement in the workers' compensation system has been a little controversial in the past, and there have been regular efforts to ask the legislature to change who can be an attending physician for workers' compensation purposes. And I think this bill is a responsible approach to addressing that question, because rather than jumping to a conclusion, it creates a process by which data can be accumulated, and then there will ultimately be a report that the legislature can then decide how to act upon that. We've met with Dr. Sabo and with Dr. Wisdom many times over the last 4 or 5 months when we first heard about this study, and then in helping to point out some issues that need to be addressed. And I would have to say that those meetings have all been very productive and cooperative, and we've worked together, and they have been responsive to questions that we have raised about how the study would be performed. There are a couple of points that I'd like to make that I think are yet to be resolved, but I think will be resolved amicably. And one of those is that as the bill is presented, it says that SAFE will do the study. What we would like to see is that the study, the components of the study and the design of the study be done in a cooperative way between SAFE and whoever else is involved, and Dr. Sabo and OHSU, and we've been cooperating so far on that, and I'm sure that will continue. One issue that the bill speaks to is that the purpose of this study is to find out whether it is cheaper for injured workers to have access to chiropractic care. And I think some people have raised a question about, well, is low cost the only thing that we care about in treating injured workers? You can have a low cost and a poor outcome, and I think that it's important that there be some consideration to what was the result of the treatment of the workers who are in this study, how has it affected their ability to return to work and become productive again. So I know that Dr. Sabo has some plans for analyzing the data and reaching those conclusions. I just point out that the bill as it's written speaks only to cost, and we don't think that cost is the only important factor.
Can I ask a question?
Representative Greenlee?
You do have in your data set, however, when a worker goes back to work, I mean, is that something that can be easily determined in the data set?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, yes, we do have that information.
So that's an easy outcome variable to add.
Yes, it can be.
Thank you.
The second point is who would be involved in doing the study. SAFE is certainly the largest carrier and is the state's own workers' compensation insurance carrier, but the people who we insure are not really a complete cross-section of the workers' compensation market. SAFE has a lot more smaller employers than other insurance companies. The entire workforce of the state of Oregon is insured by SAFE, and so our book of business, if you like, is not really representative of the a complete cross-section of the Oregon market. And so we've suggested that perhaps the study should include not just SAFE, but perhaps the three largest insurance companies that write workers' compensation insurance in the state. And then the third point is dealing with phased release of the funds. As the bill's written, I think it says we'll go ahead and do it, and $1 million is available to do the study. We've suggested to Dr. Sabo, and I believe he agrees with this, that it should be, first of all, an initial phase in which we work through all these details about how the study will be done. And every meeting that we have, there are new things that come up and can be incorporated into the study. And we want to make sure that the study is going to be right, because it's going to go for 5 years, and there'll be a lot of energy put into this, and we want to make sure at the end of 5 years that people will accept it as a valid study and not just say, well, we can't really count on these conclusions because they didn't do it right in the first place. We want to make sure that the study is done right, and initial funding should cover that workup stage. And then once everybody's comfortable that it's really going to produce the kind of study that we want, then the rest of the funding should be released. So those are the points that we are concerned about. I think those will be worked out. If I could just also respond to that question about what chiropractors are able to do in the workers' compensation system today. The law says that a chiropractor can be an attending physician for the first 30 days of treatment or for 12 visits. And for that period, they are treated the same as any other practitioner. Beyond that, if a worker wants to be treated by a chiropractor, they have to be referred back by either an MD or a DO. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
There's just one more. I've only been here, this is only my second term, but I think the first time a research study has come to the legislature that I've been familiar with, although there may have been others. Is it my understanding that the reason there's a bill here is because SAFE believes that they couldn't participate in this study without getting legislation that authorized that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, we told Dr. Szabo when he first met with us that there needed to be a bill, and the reason that you have to have a bill is that the statute today prescribes who will be an attending physician in the way that I just described. Chiropractors can only legally treat injured workers for 30 days or 12 visits. And what this bill does is to say that for the purposes of this study, that section of statute will not apply to the participants in the study. If without a bill, it would not be legal for that requirement to be waived.
May I follow up, sir? So this bill's not here to get the $1 million funding. That's a different source, and it's the purpose of the bill is to allow you, and I assume other carriers, if they want to participate, to give them the waiver that allows them to participate in the study. That's the main purpose of this bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, that's certainly essential for the study to go forward, yes.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Boone.
How will the people be, the participants in the study be chosen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Boone, that question is probably better directed to the two previous witnesses, but I can tell you my understanding of that is that they will attempt to find a cross-section of employers that will then be divided into two groups, a study group and a control group, if you like. And then the workers of those employers, the workers in the study group, will be notified that if they are injured, they will have access to chiropractic treatment in the same way as they would to an MD or a DO.
Dr. Szabo, did you have a perspective on President Boone's question?
I defer to Dr. Wilson.
You need to come forward and say your name again, please.
Dr. Jennifer Wisdom from Oregon Health and Science University. Mr. Davies described the participant process accurately.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we have a sense, by the way, of how many people are going back once the month or 12 visits is expired, where the chiropractor is the attending physician, and that folks go to see a medical doctor or a DO, and then they get referred back to chiropractic care? Do you have a sense of that?
Mr. Chair, I really don't. I haven't looked at statistics on that.
Okay. Sorry about not letting you know about that question ahead of time. Representative Anderson, do you have a comment? Okay. All right. Thanks very much. And then we'll invite John Schultz forward, please, with the Department of Consumer Business Services in the Workers' Compensation section. Good morning, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. Good morning, members of the committee. I'm John Schultz. I'm the administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and it's my pleasure to be here today on House Bill 2588. We, too, have had the opportunity to work with Dr. Szabo and Dr. Wisdom on this bill. Dr. Szabo last week presented to the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee as well, and is scheduled to present again at their next meeting. You've heard a lot about the current workers' compensation law and who can be an attending physician, and I won't run back over that. Just a couple of comments. Just to add on, you've heard that a chiropractic physician can be an attending physician for a limited period of time, and then they can continue to provide services as long as they have a referral back from someone who actually qualifies under workers' compensation law currently as an attending physician, which is basically a medical doctor or a doctor of osteopathy. That also requires a written treatment plan in terms of that re-referral. The third way that a chiropractic physician can treat is if they are inside a managed care organization, and Dr. Szabo did talk a little bit about that. They must be subject to the terms and conditions of the managed care contract in that regard. House Bill 2588 will require the Oregon Health and Sciences University, in conjunction with the Center of Health and Disability Policy, to conduct the research project to determine if workers' compensation claims costs would be reduced by allowing workers to use chiropractic services instead of the way the system works today, where a medical doctor or a doctor of osteopathic is the attending physician. The bill also allows the expenditure of $999,360 from the Workers' Benefit Fund for the research and the report. The Workers' Benefit Fund is a fund that's a fund of money to set aside funds for workers to receive benefits. It's either workers or their beneficiaries. The two largest expenditures out of the funds currently, one is the retroactive reserve, which pays workers who were injured under a previous benefit schedule that is currently obsolete. For example, you might have a worker who was fatally injured in 1975 under the 1975 benefit schedule. His beneficiary may still be receiving benefits, but there's been quite a bit of change in the cost of living since 1975. The retroactive reserve, which is part of the Workers' Benefit Fund, would pay for that difference. The retroactive reserve is by far the largest expenditure from the fund. The second largest is reemployment assistance benefits that are provided to workers and employers to encourage disabled workers to return to work. It's certainly important to gather information about the workers' compensation system in Oregon, including looking at alternative methods from those currently used. And it's important that we continue to provide Oregon injured workers with necessary compensation and treatment for their injuries while keeping the cost of workers' compensation insurance low. There are competing proposals for studies regarding workers' compensation. There have been studies of workers' compensation in the past, and as I mentioned, there are competing proposals before the legislature, this legislative assembly. We have proposals from the Bureau of Labor for studies about civil rights. We have a proposal to study claim denials. We have a proposal to study the assigned risk program. We already expend $6.4 million per biennium for research to the Center for Regional Occupational Environmental Toxicology. So there are studies that normally go on around the workers' compensation system that the legislature must approve. Careful analysis of these proposals, including to determine if they should be pursued at all, should occur to ensure that the employers and workers who this system is designed to protect are going to be the beneficiaries of these studies. Over the last 15 years, we've lowered costs to employers here in Oregon while increasing benefits to injured workers, and I don't think there's another state in the nation that can make that claim. We currently are the 10th lowest cost state in the nation for the cost of workers' compensation premium. That reduction in premium has primarily occurred since 1990 and has resulted in over $10 billion worth of savings for Oregon employers. It's something that I know no other state can say in this country. Over the same time period, benefits to workers have increased. We've increased their wage replacement benefits when they're disabled. We've increased permanent partial disability rates, which is an award that a worker gets who suffers a permanent disability as a result of their injury. Those have been increased well over 300%. Most importantly, we have a lot less workers getting hurt and killed on the job, and I think that's probably the biggest success we have here in Oregon. And that's happened while the Oregon workforce has grown by nearly 50% over the last 15 years.
Mr. Chair, may I have a question?
Yes, for me.
Thank you. On that third point, between 87 and 02, the number of accepted disabling claims, how many... Can you compare the number of claims that were made as opposed to those that were accepted? Do you know what I'm Is it clear what I'm asking?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei. Yes, we track that, and you have the number of claims that are filed, you have the number of claims that are accepted, and then you have the number of claims that are denied as well. The denial rate has been hovering right around 17%, 16 to 17% in the workers' compensation system over about the last 12 years. It hasn't really gone up or gone down much. It varies right around that amount.
So the number of claims filed has remained pretty constant? Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, no, I'm sorry. Let me be a little clearer on that. Actually, the number of claims that are being filed in the workers' compensation system have been going down rather dramatically,
great,
not only here in Oregon, but across the country as well.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Last session, the legislature passed HB 3669, which allowed an expansion in the authority of nurse practitioners to treat and authorize workers and authorize temporary disability benefits for injured workers. That included a provision to evaluate the effect of this change and to report this to the legislature. That authority that was provided in that bill sunsets on January 2nd, 2008. We're already evaluating the impact of expanding authority of a group of treatment providers other than medical doctors currently. The Workers' Compensation Division has raised some issues and some questions regarding this study, which we have shared with Dr. Sabo and Dr. Wisdom. One is that in most workers' compensation studies that are proposed here in Oregon, there's a request for proposal process that's followed. Now, that results in several applications that compete to perform the study. This has the advantage of deflecting criticism about the results, reflecting an in-house or an in-state bias. It provides the benefits of having usually known national experts in the field of workers' compensation research performing the study, getting their opinions about how that study could be performed. In this case, this bill already specifies that OHSU will perform the study. This certainly has the benefit of keeping the funds in Oregon for the study. But this does eliminate some of the other positive benefits that I mentioned.
Can I mention that?
Yes.
The instances you're talking about, RFP, is when the department decides there needs to be a study and then seeks somebody to do it. Is that the usual RFP model? Is it usual that a group of investigators will come to you with an idea? You'll say, oh, that's a good idea. We'll bid for somebody else to do it. Which of those two approaches is that?
Madam Chair, Representative Greenlick, it can be, in my experience, it can be either the case that the legislature, usually acting upon the recommendation of the Management Labor Advisory Committee, determines that a study is necessary and requires the department to oversee a study, usually requiring an RFP process.
May I follow? So it's the state has decided there ought to be a study and then issues an RFP to find somebody to do it. Not the case that, say, a group of investigators from the University of Oregon or Oregon State or OHSU has come to you and said, here's a great idea that could save you money. We're prepared to do that study. You don't have any experience where that's happened and then you say, oh, sure, we'll take your idea and we'll issue an RFP and find somebody else to do it?
Madam Chair, Representative Greenlick, that would be correct. In my interim as administrator of the division, which has been for about 5 years now, that hasn't occurred like that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The bill specifies that the study is to evaluate and compare costs of claims only, and Mr. Davey commented about this. We have suggested that there could be a broader range of outcomes looked at by the study. Some others that I would mention to get on the record are length of treatment, duration of temporary disability benefits, the impairment range of workers at closure, their return to work results, to include both the recapture of wage as well as percentage of workers returning to work, disability reduction, and the classification of claims disabling versus non-disabling would all be areas that would be relatively simple to track and to include in the study. And we would definitely agree with the comment that there is more to outcome in workers' compensation than just keeping costs low. In subsection 2 of the bill itself, on page 1, lines 13 and 14 of the bill, we think it's somewhat unclear what's meant by alternative methods of study. Dr. Sabo has indicated this refers to medical treatment. We think that the bill would benefit from some clarification of that, as the phrase alternative treatment can mean different things to different people. We agree that there should be some statement of work to allow for a phased payment in this study. Section 3 of the bill could contain that. It does provide for the director now to expend funds for the study. We think that it could benefit from some specified mileposts or objectives that should be accomplished prior to payment. That is typically done in most studies.
Chair, may I ask
yes,
Mr. Well, as I read subsection 3, all it does is authorize. It says may expend no more than 990. It doesn't say in what schedule or anything else. I mean, it doesn't say all at once, or it doesn't give any schedule. Is that you reading of it as well?
Madam Chair, Representative Greenlick, that's correct. That is my reading, and our recommendation is that it should specify some mileposts or completion of objectives that could be accomplished for payment.
May I follow? But it doesn't stop you from doing it that way, does it? I mean, all it says is you may expend it. It doesn't say all at once, or, I mean, there isn't anything that would stop you from doing it that way if the bill passes and you choose to.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, no, there isn't anything that specifically stops that, and if it is the legislature's intent to do it that way, I think that we would benefit from that discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, both. Half from each of you.
We would suggest we're providing ongoing oversight of the study by the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee, who could review the study proposals and have authority to approve and make recommendations about methodology, research design, data collection, comparison, final report delivery, reported results. It could be that committee or some other committee or body that's agreeable to the Legislative Assembly, obviously. As I mentioned before, the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee has been discussing this bill, as well as the issue of financing of the study. They meet again on April 4th, 2005, at which time this bill is back on their agenda. I appreciate the opportunity.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, sir. It's a nice experience as a researcher with this kind of research that the usual approach would be to put together an advisory panel of researchers who understand the area. Would it be acceptable to the department if the study, and I would recommend something like that specifically to the investigators, would it serve the interests of the panel and of the department in regard to this particular comment if that sort of a professional advisory panel was put together?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, I think that's exactly the sort of thing that we're talking about.
Great, thank you.
And I'd be happy to answer any more questions that I can.
Okay. I'm not sure that we have any more.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. And our last panel, I'd like to invite Lisa Trussell forward, as well as J.L. Wilson. Good morning, welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Lisa Trussell, representing AOI. And I didn't check a position on this bill yet, and the reason for that is because AOI will follow the recommendation of the Management Labor Advisory Committee on Workers' Comp, who is reviewing this bill. But there are a couple of points that I did want to make raise about the bill. First of all, I was at Mahoney Hall in 1990 when we went through the workers' comp provisions, and the changes that we made to attending physician status were carefully planned, and we have made some other changes along those lines, as was alluded to earlier. Nurse practitioners, we're evaluating their increased participation over the next couple of years. The other thing that we did was that we left open an option that we wanted managed care for workers, so we created managed care organizations. And within those organizations, providers who don't meet the statutory definition of attending physician can participate within MCO's oversight. And interestingly enough, at our last Management Labor Advisory Committee meeting, the department indicated to us that over the last 3 years, they've received no complaints from workers who said they were unable to find the type of treatment that they wanted from the type of provider that they wanted to access. And also, they had received no complaints from providers that the MCOs would not let them in. That's been a common complaint that we've heard at the Management Labor Advisory Committee that indicates that providers, the MCOs, are keeping them out. But according to the information the department gave us, there's been no complaints from providers that they've been unable to access the managed care environment. The other concern with the bill, as it's written, is that it requires that the employers participate, while it leaves the choice to participate up to the employee, and have some concerns about the employer being told your groups will participate, and then it's up to the worker too. So maybe there could be some choice amongst the employers as well as to whether they want to be a part of the study.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Greenlee.
I'm not sure that I read it that way, and I wonder whether we could ask Dr. Wisdom if that is. I don't believe that's the intent of it. I believe employers need to have choice. I certainly agree with you, Lisa, and I insist on that, but it might be useful to hear if that is what's being planned.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee.
The microphone.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenlee. That's an issue that has been discussed with SAFE about exactly how that would work. If we wanted to most closely create an environment that would reflect an eventual policy change, employers would then be mandated to participate, because that's what would happen. Given concerns raised by SAFE, I think that's something that's still open to discussion. One option is to seek volunteer employers first, and then if there are not enough who volunteer, then to mandate it. Another option is to add an amendment that would indicate that employers won't experience increased costs as a result of being in the study.
Chair, may I follow? I need to put on the record that I certainly agree with Ms. Russell, but it would seem to me I don't believe any research subjects should be forced into research. In this case, I would view the groups as the subjects. And I don't see why anybody should object, because they're only being offered more flexibility if they're in the randomized rather than the control group. But I certainly think that's I'm certainly willing to put on the record that I think the study ought to be designed that way, because I don't think anybody ought to be forced into research, including groups. I'm certain that's your position, Dr. Wisdom.
Sure, Mr. Chair and Representative Greenlee. The concern had been that employers would have hesitation about participating because they would be concerned that their rates would go up, that the study would not result in reduced costs, that it would result in increased costs, and that their rates would go up. And so one way to get around that and to encourage employers to participate on a voluntary basis would be to ensure that their rates are not adversely affected. But that raises other concerns with SAFE. I'm confident we'd be able to work this out. I agree with you, of course, that people should not be compelled to participate, but I would disagree that I think the subjects in the study, or the participants, would actually be at the worker level, not at the employer level.
Well, we can take the research philosophy thing offline, but certainly from a state perspective, it would seem to me it would be, if the investigators don't have enough confidence that they can convince employers that this is a good deal, that might be one of the interesting findings of the study.
Okay. Thanks, Representative Greenlee.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dr.
Mr. Chair, I just had one other point I'd like to make, and one of the things is that we have a lot of provider bills every session that come in. Last session, it was the nurse practitioner's bill that was successful. This the study for the this study has a lot of impressive sponsors on this bill as well. And the concern that I have is that how do we justify, if we decide to do this study, then what will our response be for the other requests that I'm sure will be coming down the pike later on? So those are, and again, AOI hasn't taken a position and won't until we see what the Management Labor Advisory Committee does, and Mr. Wilson's here to represent that viewpoint. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Daldo, members of the committee. I'm J.L. Wilson, co-chair of the Management Labor Advisory Committee, also director of NFIB Oregon, representing 12,000 employers. The in its current form, we would not support House Bill 2588. We are negotiating that in the Management Labor Advisory Committee. I would say the door is wide open for us to come to agreement on that and subsequently support the bill. The issue that I want to discuss with you today is the funding source, the worker benefit fund. I want to make very clear that every worker in the state and every employer in the state funds the worker benefit fund to the tune of 3.4 cents per hour. So it's a combined 6.8 cents per hour to fund that fund. Of the, from an employer point of view, I can say that that worker benefit fund is becoming a slush fund for just about any study proposal. Any proposal that comes down the pike dealing with workers' comp, the first avenue of recourse is say, hey, let's have the worker benefit fund fund this study, fund this proposal. And we're at a point now where the fund needs to be left alone, and I'm very interested in guarding the integrity of the fund and the current programs that it does happen to support. As Ms. Trussell alluded to before, last session the management side opposed allowing nurse practitioners in as attending physicians. One of our rationale was you allow NPs in and you're going to see chiropractors, naturopaths, podiatrists, physician's assistants, and sure enough, you've seen those proposals this session. Now, when you see a $1 million price tag for this bill, I see a $5 million price tag because you're being asked to allocate $1 million for the chiropractors, which is fine, but I would suggest to you that there will be subsequent proposals to fund similar studies from the worker benefit fund for other provider groups, the naturopaths, the PAs, those folks who are interested in becoming attending physicians. So I see a much larger price tag than just the $1 million because I think that you're going to see subsequent proposals if this one passes. So the funding mechanism is important to me and how we come to that point. I can tell you that the Worker Benefit Fund already supports OHSU to the tune of $3.2 million a year. I would suggest that perhaps some of that allocation go to fund this study. In total, the worker benefit, the workers comp system, the worker benefit fund, in addition to the premium assessment account, funds OHSU to the tune of $6.4 million a year. And I would think that some of that money could, in fact, be allocated to fund the study. Because not only do you have this study, but you have different proposals that Mr. Schultz alluded to this session that proposed to use the worker benefit fund for cases of studying discrimination in workers' comp, to studying the assigned risk pool, to studying the effect of claims denials on the workers' comp system. All of those have price tags on the worker benefit fund of about $300,000 to $400,000 for this biennium. So there's a large scope of proposals not only among providers that could follow this, but a large scope of proposals in the hopper this session using WBF dollars. And I think that that's of concern to us because obviously we're interested in keeping that 3.4 cent per hour rate static. That is my concern with the bill. I only bring it up because that's a part that I'd like you to consider, not gloss over when we talk about funding this proposal. But I also want to make clear the door is very wide open. We're in discussions with Dr. Sabo and the Management Labor Advisory Committee, and the door is wide open to come to an agreement on this bill for us.
Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony this morning, both of you. JL, you bring up some interesting points. Do you think that making the provisions for nurse practitioners, has that saved the workers' compensation fund, or has it cost money?
Chair Dalton and Representative Tomei, when that bill passed last session, it was given a four-year time frame for which the department to make that study as to whether NPs are in fact saving the system money or costing the system money. And that information will probably be available in 3 years. But that was a key component of that bill, is that that data be collected by the department, analyzed, and that we come to some conclusion. Interestingly enough, that's being done by the department, and I'm not sure there was a price tag associated with that. So you have a different study being made for a different group of providers that being done by the department that was authorized last session that I don't know if it has a $1 million price tag, but I'm under the impression it does not. So I'm sure it can be done. But to answer your question, I would expect that data to be available in 3 years, because I believe we're 1 year into that right now.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
It's my understanding that we're just talking about this particular study and not the what-ifs of four or five other ones. So I think that's important to keep that in mind as we deliberate on this. But I would think that 12,000 small businesses would be very interested in hearing any way they can, or finding out any way they can, to save more money with their workers' comp expenses. And that a study such as this is exactly what's needed to determine that.
Thank you, Chair Dalton and Representative Boone. I can tell you that in terms of the NFIB constituency, there is still a very ingrained attitude to exclude providers other than physicians and what was agreed to with the Mahonia Hall agreements in 1990. This is what I would consider to be a significant leap of faith to start corralling back in providers that were excluded in those Mahonia Hall agreements. Because from our point of view, how are you going to argue with a system that saved $10 billion over 15 years? From our point of view, there's nothing wrong with that system. So to us, it's a significant leap of faith and an attitudinal change to start accommodating providers that were excluded in a reform that has actually saved us $10 billion.
And that was 15 years ago. And we heard testimony earlier from three representatives who have personal experience with, and they could give you the costs of their treatment over the years. But I think that 15 years ago, medicine has made pretty spectacular leaps and bounds, and we shouldn't make our policy based on a 15-year-old agreement, specifically only on that.
Thank you, Chair Dalton and Representative Boone. I would agree with you, but I'd also note that the 15-year agreement has produced some fantastic results, and it's very hard to argue with something that produces results like that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Boone, I think one other point I'd like to make is that during the presentation by the three representatives, I think that Representative Sumner's testimony supports that the current system worked for him. He was able to get the chiropractic care that he needed. And with the managed care organizations, you have oversight of the care, and any provider has access, and there's requirements to how the MCOs have to allow other providers access to treat their patients as well.
Representative
Kranich. Yeah, this would be one of the things that was interesting. I mean, I'm not sure that study couldn't allow the MCOs to select chiropractors to be physician, to be the attending physician. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I expect I do need to talk to Vern, because this isn't an any willing provider proposal, as I read it. It would simply say that it would allow the MCO to select chiropractors, to be attending physicians, not necessarily any physician, although there was something in Dr. Sable's testimony that allowed the inference. And Joe, I guess the only thing I would say to you is I would agree with you on a leap of faith. I think a leap of faith to change the Mahonia Hall context would be a bad idea. However, a study of 200,000 workers and the actual impact of it is really different than a leap of faith. I mean, that might give you some data that would allow this. And the one thing you and I both know is that back surgery and back care is becoming very, very expensive. It's changed since the introduction of the MRI, and that's changed since Mahoney Hall. I did a study on back surgery where we looked at what MRI criteria for laminectomies were in the Kaiser system, and found that the criteria would pick up 40% of asymptomatic men who you did an MRI on. So I think the reason I signed on to this, the reason I'm interested in this, is I think the treatment of back care in the surgery area has really changed so enormously that we are headed for a tsunami of expense in back care. And it would seem to me we should avoid taking leaps of faith. And it seems to me that's why I think some of us are supporting a study, because I think it really is important to get more than, yes, here's a better way to do it. Do I vote yes or vote no? That's. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Thanks to both of you. See, nobody else signed up to testify on that bill. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2588. And is Representative Lim available?
No.
Okay.
But it's done.
Okay. We will open a public hearing on House Bill. Actually, we'll stand at ease for a moment. We'll call the House Committee on Health and Human Services back to order, and we're going to adjourn our meeting. We're going to, Representative Lim is not here on 2672, so we will take that up at another time. So with that, meeting's adjourned.